This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm David Green.
When I saw you in the book at the hotel, I was like, oh my gosh!
Yes.
And this is what it sounds like when you're standing next to one of the most popular people in Harlem.
I just love you. I love that show.
Thank you.
Enjoy Harlem.
That is Marcus Samuelson. He's a celebrity chef. We're outside Red Rooster. That's one of his restaurants. And as you walk in the doors, you immediately see a key piece of Samuelson's design. A bar dominates the front room, nearly touching the street, as if to say to the people of Harlem, come on in. We walk past the dining tables to a kitchen that's packed with cooks too busy to smile.
I want to sit with you for a few minutes, but before, is there something in the kitchen that you can kind of point to that says something about your journey? That
Yeah, absolutely.
Michael Scott, how are you? We need to have one yard bird and one gravlax and one hash. If you can fire that right now.
Now, obviously, we're going to talk about food a bit, but the story you're about to hear is more about life than food. Samuelson was born in rural Ethiopia. He and his sister were adopted and raised in Sweden. Eventually, Samuelson would become world famous, but he has never forgotten where his journey began. I came to Harlem to talk about Yes, Chef, Marcus Samuelson's new memoir.
We just walked out of your kitchen. You ordered us something that sounds delicious. And you were very firm in kind of, you know, asking the cook. You know.
Well, I'm not asking. I'm not asking anything. I'm very clearly delivering what the expectations are. In a kitchen, there's like you have to be very direct. Very direct. It needs to be 1 liter, and there needs to be a couple of sous chefs, and the cooks need to say, yes, chef. But being humble, why is being humble something wrong in our community, in society? I was humbled many, many times for a long, long time. And in through that process of being yelled at in German, French, and English, and Swedish, I learned a lot.
I wonder if you could take me back to the very beginning of your journey. You wrote about not having a photograph of your mother, not being able to remember your mother. But tell me about those last hours and few days of her life.
Well, you know, I never seen a picture of my mother. But I knew a couple of things. I knew my sister and I and my mom were set out on a journey from walking from the village of Abu Ghadana, which is a 2-hour drive, to Addis Ababa, the capital. Mm-hmm. And we had to walk. We walked mostly at night because that's when it wasn't too hot.
And you're a tiny, sick child at this point,
I'm
we
a
should
sick
say.
Child with TB.
Tuberculosis.
And she knew that if she can just get us to the city, she could also then have somebody that could take us to a hospital. And we got to the Black Lion Hospital, where she sadly passed away, but me and my sister Linda survived. Yeah. We need knife and forks.
Wow, there are plates that are being put on the table here. What is this, Marcus?
So right now you have the yard bird. This is a dish that was so important for me to get right. I knew, coming to Harlem, I knew my fried chicken had to be better than yours, right?
You don't make good fried chicken in Harlem, you're out.
Yeah, you're out. And you had to find authorship in the food.
Making it yours.
Mm-hmm. And with the Ethiopian spice blend, cooking it on high heat, frying it on low heat, curing it in buttermilk and coconut milk, made it ours.
I was amazed in the book learning about how demanding the kitchen can be. I mean, how mean it can be. I mean, you screamed at for, you know, the smallest mistakes. One of the things that stuck in my mind was you had to cook for the owner's dog at one point. Mm-hmm. I mean, that sounds almost demeaning in a way.
Well, cooking for a dog could be demeaning, but it could also be the greatest gift if you know where you're going. For me, that opportunity to cook for Louis Blanc's dog was also a place of, can I take the abuse? Is it going to break? And how do I react? That's what they wanted to see. And also know, as a black chef, you know, I have a very small window for errors.
Well, why do you feel like your room for error was so much smaller?
Well, first of all, there didn't exist the concept of a black chef. There were black dishwashers, but there was not ever, ever, ever a black chef. So I had to not only open the door, but the concept of it that it could be even possible. But it also make me stronger. I always feel, get me in a room, give me my pots and pans, give me the ingredients, and I'll be fine.
I wonder if you could talk about, I don't want to make you talk while you're chewing, but...
Do it.
You have a daughter,
mm-hmm.
and an unplanned daughter. You were working in Austria at the time, and you were very sensitive about not falling into a stereotype. You hid her from sort of people you were working with in kitchens for a long time. What did you mean by that? What was your fear?
Well, I think I was always aware of the... My resume did not just have to be great, it had to be fantastic, with zero way of my employer to say that, well, you know, we're not going to hire him, there might be something. And I was, you know, very young and just didn't know how to deal with the whole situation properly. And I also always lived in this fear that, well, maybe they're not going to hire me, or maybe I felt like if I go out of the world and work and go as far as I possibly can, then that's my way of taking care of her. I could deal with that at 20 years old.
What stereotype did you fear?
Well, I didn't want to be another black man that was not responsible. In many ways, maybe I wasn't responsible, but I was lucky enough to have a structure with my Swedish mother to help me out.
You returned to Ethiopia much later and actually found your biological father, which sounds just... extraordinary. What was the emotion that you took kind of meeting this man who had essentially given up on you and sent your mother, you know, along with you and your sister?
Meeting my father was one of the biggest things that have ever happened to me. But since we didn't speak the same language, I felt right away I had to pick up other things. The fact that we're about the same height. He walked a little bit crooked. I walked a little bit crooked. So I saw things, similarities there.
You mentioned in the book that you struggled with whether to ever confront him and say, why did you let us go? Why didn't you, you know, take care of my sister and I when we were sick? Have you asked him?
No. In the beginning, obviously, I have all those questions as questions for me. But once you start to see, in his mind, we were saved because we were in Europe. And in his mind, that was good enough. These kids were okay. And that's an approach that very hard maybe in the West to understand. But that's an approach that a lot of people in Africa would agree with. You know, they're educated in Sweden. What's their complaint?
You still searching for your mom's photo? Is that something you continue doing for...
Every trip. When I get that picture, I want to put her in a nice place here in the restaurant that shows dignity. It's thanks to her that I'm here. Thanks to her, my sister is here. She really... offered her life in order for us to survive. So I owe her that.
That's celebrity chef and author Marcus Samuelson. His new memoir, Yes, Chef, is available this week. Now, we might not be able to give you the recipe for Marcus Samuelson's Yardbird, but fear not, food fans. Next week, Morning Edition is exploring humanity's evolving relationship with meat over millions of years. There's even a time traveler's cookbook at npr.org. Hope you're hungry.